Is everyone back?
Yes.
I'm here.
A couple people back. Good. So I just wanted to welcome everyone to our Climate Literacy Network teleconference call. This is November the 8th of 2011. And as we usually do, we start out with a request for any announcements, if anyone has some announcements they'd like to make to the group. I guess we can announce that Dan Barstow is back at Turk. For some folks know Dan. That's a return after a couple of years. Dan, you may just want to say a couple of few words just so that other folks know what you've been up to.
Sure. First of all, I want to say that I'm in a car driving, so if I get disconnected, I'll redial, and if you hear a voice, it's my friend, the GPS. But as you may recall, I don't know how many people on the phone here, but I used to be at at Turk. I was there for about 15 years, director of the Center for Earth and Space Science Education, doing a lot of work in Earth and Space and climate in particular. Then about 3 years ago, I left to become the president of the Challenger Center for Space Science Education. You may know this is a program that was set up in the wake of the Challenger accident. They take kids on simulated space missions and do a lot of very interesting Earth and space science things. But having done that for a little while, for 3 years, I decided to come back to Turk, where I think there's a broader platform to try to have an impact on Earth and space and on climate. In the interim, I was on the America's Climate Choices panel of the National Academy of Science, and it was a very interesting experience helping out shaping that educational program. But now back at Turk and trying to reconnect with people, so I'm pleased to be here.
That's great. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate that. Good to have you here again.
Thanks.
You can go back on mute. I just remembered that you said you wanted to do that. Good. Any other announcements from folks? I don't think it's a quiet time of the year, but I suspect we're all quite busy and just staying focused. A lot of us, I think, are going to be at the American Geophysical Union meeting in San Francisco in the beginning of December. I hope we all can get together. If I remember correctly, I think Tamara mentioned last week that we're trying to do an informal meeting of folks who are at AGU that are involved in climate literacy. So there'll be an announcement go out probably to the listserv just saying, okay, we're going to be meeting that day. So if you are there, it would be great to see everyone whose voices we recognize, but we don't maybe know each other face-to-face, so that would be great.
Scott, this is Frank. One thing is, given the amount of sessions that are going on and poster sessions, it wouldn't be a half bad thing to ensure that you know, we extend the invitation of those who are presenting who perhaps are not familiar with the Climate Literacy Network to join the conversation.
That's a great idea. And I know that I'm planning on putting up a sort of a list of at least not all the talks that are going to be presented, because there's so many of them, but certainly where they are, where the sessions are. But I think the idea of sort of turning it around and those folks, the folks that are presenting who may not know the network, that we're here and we'll be around, I think that's a great idea.
I think also, Scott, there's a new function that's added to the AGU where you upload your talk and you can see the talk after the talk somehow, similar to the way AMS does it. So there might be some more data that we could mine, whether that
great.
Works.
Great. No, I didn't know about that. I will check into that. Great. Any other comments, announcements, whatever? Well, if not, I'd like to introduce our speaker. As folks probably know, Kara McNeil is an assistant professor in biochemistry and geosciences education in the Department of Geosciences at Mississippi State University. And there's a little bit more of her bio on the website. And she's going to talk today, and I won't read the long abstract, but she's going to talk to us about the Climate Literacy Partnership in Southeast. This is one of the climate change education partnership funded projects around the country, and there's several regional programs or projects and a couple of thematic ones. I think there's a total of 15 or something like that. And Karen is part of one that any of us are eager to hear more about. So, Karen, I just mentioned to people that there are your slides, especially a revised set of slides as of this morning, about an hour and a half ago, are up on the website. And if people want to open that PDF, they can follow along the slides. Anything else of introduction, Karen?
No, that's great, Scott. Thank you so much.
Very
and thank
good.
You all for inviting Tamara. Asked me to give this, I don't know, about a month or so or plus ago, and I think that was a great opportunity to get plugged back into the CLN. I had been involved early during the inception of the CLN and kind of dropped off, and so this is a great way for me to get plugged back into the a little bit more active and my membership. I get all the emails, but I'm not as busy like everybody else. It's just things take over. But with the I've been here at Mississippi State now for 4 years. This is my fifth year as an assistant professor, and I've been fortunate enough to work with Tamara Ledley on several projects. I have a DRK-12 with her, and we had a GeoEd project and a NASA project, which all rotate around working in the climate system in some way. My interests are mainly in studying how people understand complex Earth systems and ways of helping to support that understanding through teacher professional development, through development of curriculum materials, and then also really researching what are the cognitive difficulties that people have. And so that gives you a little bit of background into my interest in geoscience education. I'm also a biogeochemist, and so I have a fully functional lab here at MSU where we have GCs and MSs and spectrophotometers and all sorts of that fun equipment as well, so I kind of wear two different hats sometimes, but I see them as coming together and understanding complex systems in regard to both through the authentic science understanding, but then also through teaching and learning. So anyway, that gives you just a little bit of background. Going to the slide presentations, I'll go through, but you guys can feel free to just interject whenever, and if I don't hear you, just stop me and, say go ahead. I don't think all the slides are numbered, but I'll try to read the title of the slide as I go through. This slide, or this presentation, obviously focuses on the CLPSE project, which was awarded to us last fall, and it's been a very quick-moving project, as many of you may be familiar with if you're at all involved on a CSEP. They're very fast-moving, and they're monsters, but it's great. We've really had a great time here in this in our project, and so I hope this presentation just gives you a little bit of a feel for what we're doing. So I'm going to move to slide number two, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with the CSET program, but just in case, I just wanted to spend a quick slide on it. Basically, it's an NSF program that has two phases. The first phase is deliverable, which is what everyone is right now as far as the ones that were awarded in 2010, and they are called the planning phase, where basically you're developing a network to create a strategic plan and evaluative plan for what would be a phase two award, which everyone will have to reapply for whenever it comes back out. We're expecting that maybe in December the RFP will come out, so maybe a March due date, and that's just speculatory at this point, to apply for that phase two funding. In the original RFP, it said 5 to 7 of those that were funded would continue on, so I'm not really sure how this is all going to pan out, but in any case, so we're in phase one right now. Like I said, we began last year. We were one of the 15 phase one projects that were selected, and it was very, very highly competitive. We're non-advocacy, but we are grounded in evidence-based science. And our objective is to lay a foundation for improved education for climate change and the impact in the Southeast U.S. And I'm on slide 3 now, moving to slide 4. So the CLIPSE project, basically we have 4 main things we're trying to do. Develop an integrated network, catalog existing resources and materials, develop a strategic plan and evaluate a plan. So those are our big 4 things that we're trying to do in the nuts and bolts. And this is what most CSEPs would do, but they can be thematic, like Scott mentioned, where they would focus on, you know, maybe a specific problem or issue and not necessarily be about a whole region. The CLIPSE project, why the Southeast U.S.? I'm on the next slide that shows the maps of the Southeast U.S. Well, basically, we have some very unique characteristics. If you look at the number of Baptists, the number of conservatives, and also the African-American population as compared to the rest of the Southeast U.S., those are some unique features, but also, if you look at the bottom left-hand map on this slide, it shows you the regional climate initiatives, and those in white have none. And this came out from the Pew Center. So there's a lot of opportunity to do work related to climate and climate change in the Southeast U.S., but also recognizing that there's a very unique demographic and very unique cultural issues that makes the Southeast unique in itself, and especially in what may be some ideologies that could have certain views of climate change. So I'm moving to the next slide. So the CLIPSE project, like all CSEPs, has a team of climate scientists, learning scientists, and practitioners that come together with our partners that we have as part of our network, where we have targeted a variety of audiences. And these audiences include faith-based groups, leisure groups, agriculture groups, culturally diverse groups, which would be embedded to all of our groups, as well as missing one. There's a slide with them all in a minute, but I'm missing our 5th group. Oh, K-12 educators. And so basically, together, we're coming up with a strategic plan. And so moving to the next slide, what we want to do is create this diverse network partnering community, and we're trying to get to know our network, which includes those of our target populations, and we're trying to knit our network by bringing them together through information exchanges, through workshops and webinars. And one of the ways we've gotten to know the net is through the distribution of our climate stewardship survey, which we distributed to about 450 folks. I have a slide on that in a minute, to get an idea of where our partners were in their knowledge and perception of climate change. And so moving to the next slide, basically this logic model kind of summarizes what we're trying to do in CLIPSE through this initial 1 to 5 years. We are creating diverse and engaged network. We're holding workshops. We're holding webinars. We're designing a strategic plan, just like all the other CSEPs. And we conducted the climate survey. We hold regular advisory board meetings. And we align, one thing that we're doing is aligning existing climate change resources to Southeast U.S. Education standards. Because earth science isn't taught as prevalently at the high school level like they may be in some of the other portions of the United States, this standard alignment is really important for this section for our K-12 target audiences. Also, we're conducting some pilot public discussions or listening sessions that we call them as well with our partners and our various partnering groups. For instance, we've held some conversations with local pastors and priests. We've held a discussion with the garden clubs of the South and a few other discussions just to get a sense as to where they are on and what they want to know about regarding climate change and how best to engage these audiences as we move to the future, whether it be a book study or you know, how to move forward in our public dialogues and discussions. For some of these groups, it's just getting them to the table, and even to discuss climate change is a big step forward. So, and for some of them, it's you know, they have some ideas, but you know, they're wanting to get more information. So how do we get that information to them best? And then doing some learning sciences research as well, or pilot studies of, you know, if we gave some people materials like the Seven Essential Principles of Climate Change, that pamphlet, how are they utilizing that? Is that a good way of disseminating basic information? Or what parts of it could we adapt for maybe a different sort of flyer? And those sorts of things. So we're trying to work out some of those details. If we look at the outputs of, and I'm not going to go through all of this, but I'm just going to summarize some of them. Basically, you know, we want a healthy network that is vibrant, diverse, with engaged partners. We want new partners continually being brought into our network. We want the resources and materials that we inventory and that we'll eventually vet. You know, through a vetting process in phase two that we have yet to be determined, especially with some of the informal resources that can be a little bit more difficult, but that is part of our strategic plan. The materials that we have available on the website now are actually the clean materials that many of you are probably familiar with that we've just aligned to the state standards. So we're pretty confident that the vetting process on that was a good process, and we feel good about accessing and referring to those resources. And, you know, we hope that CLPSE will ultimately be connected and able to communicate about climate change. Did I have a question from somebody? Nope. Okay. And this communication point is a really, really big one where we want to train the leaders of our partnering organizations as well as our climate scientists in ways to communicate about climate science efficiently, and also lead people in a method of thinking about climate change, which includes critical thought. But we've learned that using the word critical thinking is maybe not the best word to use, as some people get a little offended if you say, I mean, you know, rightly so, well, we need to teach you how to critically think. Well, that's not necessarily the way to go about that. And so it's a process, it's a method, not necessarily a message that we're trying to get across of how to, you know, take in all this.
8 seconds exit to Bell Street.
Okay. And so ultimately, we hope that we're going to influence individuals' knowledge, thoughts, and behaviors surrounding climate change, and that these resources are utilized in formal and informal environments, and that eventually down the line that we'll influence key decision makers through the education of these target groups, and that some climate change solutions in the Southeast will be realized as an effect of, as a result of our activity, and that our that CLPSE is a central node for organizations in the Southeast who are doing this sort of work to come together on. So that's kind of the big picture. Right now, moving to the timetable slide, we just had our fall workshop where our partners were able to give us feedback on our strategic plan draft. And we're in the process of taking that information and updating our strategic plan. We're continuing and inventorying the resources that are out there, doing some online work that I'll share with you in a minute. The map of our current partners, I'm on the next slide after the timetable. You can see all the pink dots, and some of the dots are bigger than others. That means we have multiple partners in those areas. And these are folks that are attending our webinars, attending our workshops, and or that we have letters of commitment from. And, you know, we're looking to try to continue to expand, especially in Alabama and Georgia. But like I said, that, you know, this is a very dynamic map, and we're continually adding partners. We will likely be adding the state of North Carolina, since we have two partners now from that state. And so, and in this list, you can read over the partners that we have so far. The next slide is another map just from our last workshop. These are all the folks that our partners told us that we need to talk to. And so I have confidence that, you know, there is a lot of people doing activity on climate change in the Southeast, and, you know, finding the strategic partners is one of our key things that have a lot of reach, but then also just knowing that there are so many people doing work and that our partners know is, you know, it's this you know, you can continually grow and grow and grow as you keep adding more folks. So we hope that our map might look like this next page here and here by next and by the spring. And so what we ask our partners to do when they come in, we ask them to help us recruit other regional partners. We ask them to participate in project surveys, webinars, workshops, and pilot studies, such as, you know, doing the CSS or other activities we may have going on. We ask them to let us know of resources that we need to inventory and what activities their organization is involved in that we can let the community know about by posting it on our website and things like that. And, of course, provide us feedback about the strategic plan. So those expectations are up front. And one of those things that we had asked them to do was to complete the climate stewardship survey and also to disseminate it among their memberships if they had any or their organization. The CSS was, I guess, sent out this summer. It had 108 items. 35 of them had knowledge items and 62 were perception. 11 were demographic. It was administered to 420 participants. It was a non-probability volunteer sample of convenience, but it had a very high reliability of 0.91, which is great. We have submitted just the survey itself for review to the Journal of Environmental and Behavior, so hopefully soon it will be hopefully accepted and available to anyone who wants to use them. But of course, if you're interested,
excuse me a second.
Yeah.
I got a little confused. To whom did you administer this survey, and you sort of, and more specifically, what kind of questions were there?
So we asked questions about their knowledge of climate and climate change and global warming in general. And then we asked
these,
about
these
their
are of your partners, or who are you? Who filled out the survey?
Yes, of our partners, and then also we had them distribute it to their membership. So, for instance, one of our partners is the Geographic Alliances. So they not only, which we did have a partner survey versus a non-partner survey, so we would be able to determine the difference of our direct contact versus their memberships. So there was essentially two surveys. One, they were the same questions, but one they identified themselves as our partner, and the other one was their membership. So, so for instance, did you guys sciences? They have distributed it to their teachers. And if we had a leisure group with the garden clubs may have distributed it to their memberships of individuals who are part of their organization. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, no problem. And so I don't have time, obviously, to go into all the results of the survey, but you can find a recent webinar that was conducted with the initial analyses on our website. And this was our main goals of the survey was to just to get a feel of where they are and their knowledge and perceptions. You know, good, it was a good idea to do to have a sense of, you know, where they are. Within every group is going to be a little bit different on this campaign, or I call it a campaign, but really on this relationship of moving ahead to meeting the needs that are there regarding climate change education. And so that was one effort. And then so the next effort was that continual effort is working on the strategic plan. And this is the strategic plan format that we're following, where we have basically we've gone through and we have governing ideas, we have goals, strategies, organizational design, financial plan, and also evaluation procedures. And so those are the big portions of what we're generating. We obviously have written our first draft. We've gotten feedback on that, so we're continuing forward. If you're into strategic planning, then this is a good, visual for you. Thank goodness for strategic planners. We have hired some really wonderful strategic planners who have really helped us through this process, so it's been good. But so one of the things is knowing what your core values are, and that's the slide I'm on. And our core values are these five core values. CLPSI will use current and rigorous science. CLPSI will be inclusive, synergistic, and collaborative. CLPSI resources and programs will be effective, useful, and accessible. And learning that occurs through CLPSI will result from sound learning theory, span multiple disciplines, and be guided by information about our audiences, and encourage critical thinking and decision-making. And finally, CLPSI will support the process of hearing from all parties to get a shared understanding. Our vision is that we have a network, that we have educational resources and programs, and that we have public dialogues. And I'll go into each of these in a moment in a little bit further detail. And our mission is the statement here, where CLPSI will improve understanding of Earth's climate system and its implications in the Southeast U.S. through the communication and dissemination of accurate and reliable climate science information by providing accessible and useful educational programs and products, and by fostering civic dialogue and critical thought. So that's our mission statement. It took a very long time to get that mission statement, if any of you have been involved in this process. And it may change since we're not 100% done, but I think we're pretty happy with this one. The next slide, I'm on the triangle of the programmatic structure, and there's already been some revision to this, but at this point, this is how we're representing the structure of CLPSI. And like I said before, we had three major things in our vision. We had a climate change education network, we have educational resources and programs, and we have direct engagement of target audiences. And so, again, those target audiences have included K-12 education, agriculture groups, faith-based groups, leisure and outdoor organizations. The higher ed group and the culturally diverse group, after our review this last, about a week ago when we had the workshop, they may no longer be primary audiences, although they clearly are part of the other audiences that we're recruiting from. So, but one of our primary focuses is on the faith-based communities in the Southeast U.S., and that's in part what makes CLPSI unique. It also, through a number of discussions, many of those that are in the other groups will also be part of the faith-based community, so it allows us to reach many different target audiences at the same time. And so I'm not going to go into all the inner workings of the triangle, but just you can look at those on your own. And like I said, this is still under revision, but this is where we are right now in our development of our strategic plan, programs, services, audiences, and competencies, what they're called. If you're able to, I don't know if you are next to a computer, you can go to our website, which is www.clipsy-project.org. We're really excited about this website. It was released, about a month and a half ago, and so we've been happy with having this interface with our partners. I'm just going to go through on the slides a couple of the things that's housed on the website that I wanted to talk about. One was that we do have monthly webinars, and there you can see the last five that we've had. The slides are included if you wanted to just peruse to what we've been discussing. During these webinars, A couple of them have provided an opportunity for our partners to give us feedback about our strategic plan. We've also had some of our partners present about their organizations and the things that they have done regarding climate change. For instance, we have a partner, we have Ducks Unlimited as one of our partners in our leader group end, and they have done a great much work with their memberships about what their memberships' perceptions and knowledge of climate change are, how much they trust the U.S. compared to other information sources about climate change information, and also they know their memberships, they know the demographic of their membership quite well. So in some ways, it's a bit of a model for, granted, very narrow audience, but for people who are trying to do this sort of work. Also, we've had some of our faith communities. Creation Care is one of our partners who've given us information as to how they're working with the Christian community and through stewardship and their, the beliefs of various Christian organizations. And so anyway, they have turned out to be very useful both for us to learn about our partners and for them to learn about each other. And also another way of keeping in touch with our network and getting feedback about the strategic plan as our planning team continuously works on those items. We have in attendance about 20 to 25 at these webinars. Also, we have what's called CLPSE Connect on our webpage, and our partners can become a member of the CLPSE Connect community. And we have, as a result of our last workshop, we have working groups where they can work and helping us to think of strategies to reach some of these various target groups. What are the things, who are the people that we ought to know about to do this well moving into phase two? And so this just released when we had our workshop, so we're really excited about this as well, and it'll be another way that our partners can keep in touch and move forward and share information. And these are the working groups, like I said, that we have working now in our website, and of course it then also helps those that are interested in similar target audiences to get together and share information. And this is the slide on CLPSE workshops with the pictures is what I'm on now. You can see, you know, we have fairly decent attendance at our workshops. I think about 44 in our last workshop that we held just last week in Memphis. We will also be conducting a spring workshop. We're thinking it may be in Savannah, Georgia this in the spring. So if any of you are near and want to come, we certainly welcome you. And some of the other things that we're doing, like I mentioned earlier, aligning climate change resources with state standards in the U.S. In our website, if you go under resources and you click on formal climate change resources, you'll see this. Right now we only have Mississippi up, although we've already done alignment for five other states, and hopefully it'll be up publicly soon. We, like I said earlier, we were observing learners interfacing with climate change materials through eye tracking studies, and also we've been doing a number of listening sessions and public dialogues with some of our partners and their memberships, and just trying to get to know more about what the need is and how to best approach it given some of the sensitive communities in which we're working with. So where we're going from here is we hope to finalize our strategic plan. We're going to work with our partners and expand our network as much as we can for those that are appropriate and strategic and want to be part of what we're doing. Obviously, the cataloging of resources is really important, and what we hope to have up on our website soon is a auto feature where partners can input resources that they think we ought to know about, and that would add to our database that way. And then eventually in phase two, once we've gone through a vetting system, we can make those available so with a larger community so they could be better shared in between partners in our network. And we're still working on our evaluative plan. And like I mentioned earlier, we'll be having our spring workshop hopefully in Savannah, Georgia. And March will likely be proposal submission time. So that's – oh, speaking of AGU, the last slide here, we do have a few presentations that are happening at AGU, and I put them up here so that you could have them if you're attending AGU and want to see a little bit more details and what I had time to go over what we're doing. It'd be great to see y'all there and share a little bit more about what CLPSI's been up to. It's been a really exciting time. Like I said, we've been just going strong, going hard, and really there's, you know, at our last workshop, we just saw how many really qualified, talented, and enthusiastic people that are doing this work in the Southeast and want to be involved in something like this. And so there's a lot of promise to really get a good initiative in the Southeast U.S. Going, and there's a lot of need. And so that just makes us really motivated to keep on chugging along. Sometimes you can, you know, the people have different perceptions of what the Southeast is like, and it can be negative. But I really think there's good opportunity for this this sort of initiative, and I think that we're doing good, marching along. So I am the CLPSI PI. We have Rebecca Smith from MSU is a co-PI. She's an economist. David Rutherford from University of Mississippi is a geographer who is also a co-PI. We have Nair, who is a climate scientist at University of Alabama, who's co-PI, and finally Dwight Hare here at Mississippi State, who's in education, College of Education, is also a co-PI. So anyway, I just wanted to make sure to mention those folks. I guess at this point, I'm pretty much done with the slide. I'm sure there's a lot of questions, and I feel like I've been talking forever. So I guess I'll open it up to whatever comments you all might have.
Oh, that's great, Karen. Thank you for this. So, yes, are there questions? Please.
Yeah, this is Dan. That was a very interesting presentation. And one thing that struck me is the diversity of partners you have, and in particular, how your co-PIs, and presumably the thrust of your work, is not just science, but also includes economists and geographers. And, you know, because I think we see, you know, we've seen that the issues around climate literacy and climate action are only partly scientific. They ultimately have to deal with the social, behavioral, and economic sciences. And I'm wondering about your thoughts on your linkages with those experts and that sort of aspect of your work.
Correct. That's a really wonderful question. You know, this has been a great project in that I've worked on, and probably one of the most challenging because of that. We have such great people from distributed expertise areas, and climate, and the thoughts is, you know, climate change isn't just a geosciences problem, that we have to let the others, you know, and work with the others where it, you know, economics, what a, you know, great example. And, you know, I've learned about this thing called ecological economics, which I didn't know about before. And, you know, we have an advisory board member who works in that area. And, you know, ultimately, when it comes down to policies and working with decision makers, they sometimes want the bottom line. And that has to come from some of the folks that I'm not qualified to give them that, but our, you know, economics folks can help us do that, or at least give some, you know, they may not feel that very tight in their numbers, but at least some perspective on that. And then also, you know, our geographers, David Rutherford studies, he's a cultural geographer and studies ideologies and what sorts of ideologies people would come with that could perhaps just give them a different perspective on climate and climate change. You know, faith and political ideologies are two great examples of that, and trying to, you know, keep that in mind, as well as obviously keep it science-based with the evidence of science, but all of these things are important factors that you can't negate. And so I don't know if that answers your question completely or if you wanted something more specific.
No, that was a very good answer. Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, this is Noah Newman with Kokoroz, and I just more have, I suppose, a comment, and it's a bit of a segue from what you just went over, but I really like the idea of targeting faith-based groups, political ideologies, et cetera. So I think I'm just going to be very curious to see how that progresses and watch closely and hopefully learn something from you guys.
Yeah, and you know what? That's very similar to what the NSF told us. They also want to kind of are curious and want to see how it plays out, and you know, I have to say it's not easy, you know, but from our informal listening sessions that we've had recently with some of the local folks, you know, they're very open to it's you know, just sitting down and talking, you know, from the local, we talked to some local Baptist pastors, and, you know, I think where the question comes up is defining stewardship in a way, you know, and when does stewardship, you know, how far is one supposed to take it in their religious philosophies, when maybe, you know, there's other issues that then it may conflict with, you know, jobs or, you know, what other issues may come up. And so, you know, and that's sort of an internal issue that they are struggling with. But perhaps, you know, by providing some of the scientific information and a safe environment that helps them talk about it with others, in not only in a homogeneous group but a heterogeneous group, that may help them come to their own fundamental understanding of what it means to be good stewards within their own definition of their faith, and ultimately may strengthen some of their faith. Obviously, that wouldn't be our goal. That isn't Calypso's goal, but it may be the leader's goal of those organizations. So, that's sort of where we are in some of our understanding of working with some of these faith-based organizations. Rusty Pritchard, who is the lead of Creation Care in this organization called Flourish, has been doing this for a number of years and is very well versed not only in the academic end of understanding these groups, but as a sort of leader in his own right of helping Christians learn about the stewardship portion of what their faith asks them to do.
Karen, this is Frank Niefold over at NOAA.
Yep.
Hey, so one thing that I'd be interested to explore with you is how you're connected to other parts of NOAA who have interests in your region. Specifically,
okay.
Thinking the three RISAs. If you're, I imagine you're familiar with RISAs, but RISA is a regional integrated sectoral assessments.
Okay.
It's climate scientists working on the interface between scientific information and decision-making processes.
Okay.
And so I would think, you know, there's actually a very good overlap on your geography with,
yes.
you know, because there's three, and I maybe we can take care of this offline, but you know, there's also, you know, like Kokoros works very closely with state climatologists and the Weather Service, and I mean, there's other parts of the enterprise that we have, and also Department of Interior, that I would imagine you would want to connect with.
Yeah, that's great, Frank. Thank you. Those are the types of things that we need to know about. I have just, I think, off heard a little bit about the reasons, but I don't know them in well.
Okay.
So that would be very helpful. If you wouldn't mind, maybe even we can have a conversation or email me a link or something that would be helpful.
Well,
we are working with a grant, but have not worked with this particular group that you've mentioned.
Sure, will do.
Great, thank you.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
This is Jane Heinz Fry, and I too am very struck and happy about the diversity of partners that you're working with to pull together. The particular piece that I tend to focus in on is how we learn, and particularly how we find meaning together in groups. So my own experience is in concept mapping type strategies.
Yeah.
And I do have there's a contact that I have down at Macon State College in Georgia who I'd be glad to send to you. And I guess the question we have here is how we can best connect with you. I think your email must be on the slideshow. Is that right?
It is. That's what got updated in the last hour and a half before the presentation, as I realized I missed a letter. So make sure you have the updated one. It's on the last slide. It's ksm163@msstate. There's two S's, .edu.
Okay, so the we should use the email that is at the end of the slideshow.
Yes, correct.
Got it. Okay. Thank you so much. This was awesome.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you so much for listening to me. Like I said, I felt like I was talking forever, but thank you.
We're all here. We're listening, and we appreciate what you're doing.
Not a very good public dialogue when I feel like I'm doing all the talking, but so.
It's hard when we can't see each other's faces.
That's,
I get that.
Correct. Okay, though, this is the way it is.
Karen, this is Scott Carley. I'm curious about the sort of geographic coverage of the network. When I look at your map and sort of your current partners, I'm just surprised that there's only two partners in Texas. Is there a story there, or is it just it just takes time?
There's a little bit of both. Texas has not been one. We've just recently started adding partners from Texas. We had an investigator who started from Texas, and there was a lot of debate as to whether Texas should be in our map or not, or should we cut the state in half, you know, because Texas is a big place, you know, and obviously with it being part of the Gulf, we wanted to have it, but, you know, and so we've been going back.
Right. I was curious about that.
Yeah, so we did get, many of you probably know, Kathy Ellens came to our last workshop from the University of Texas, and she was also representing Texas A&M. And so we're slowly growing, but they've been a little bit slower than some of the other states. And we obviously, you see our dots, we have a lot more in Mississippi than the other states, and we're working on that. We did receive a network expansion supplemental funding from NSF to kind of help us continue to expand our network a bit more. And, you know, it just all takes time. And it's amazing to think that we've only been going at this for just a little over a year now.
Yeah.
When you think of, you know, big projects like this, you know, sometimes it takes that long just to get things going. And we were going and going and going after day one. So...
Great, thank you.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's, I'm working a little bit, this is Scott again, working with the Great Lakes, CCE.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of thing, is that the original partners were mostly in Michigan, and so this trying to expand into other areas can be a little tricky, and it's just, and part of it is who knows whom and all of this kind of stuff. And so that's why I was kind of interested in whether there was some sort of mystery to why some states are well represented and others aren't. Is there something that you're doing or that we both should be doing to expand the network?
Well, I think working through the partners you have, I mean, like I said, that second map that I showed was all of the people. As we had that workshop, I had a graduate student working on Google Earth.
Yep.
And I asked the partners just throughout, during breaks or whatever, let him know, write down the organization and the state, and he'll let us know who we need to be talking to.
Yes.
You know, and by the end of that day and a half, we filled up the map.
Yeah, it's great coverage.
No, so now we need to, obviously, there's the next step that has to be taken, but obviously our partners know, you know, over time you get that. It's just, you know, now we've got to follow up and help them and hopefully find ways for them to be plugged into CLPSI somehow.
Yep.
And then also, you know, finding ways, you know, that they can, you know, it's a balance between, you know, give, you know, basically what do they get? And what are you asking them to do?
Yes. What's the value proposition?
Exactly. I mean, you know, that's important to kind of have figured out as well. So.
Yeah, this is Dan. I had another question, and maybe it's inherent in the design of the project, but it struck me that your focus is on public engagement and public awareness through these various organizations rather than a school-focused climate literacy program. And I think that's a good thing because schools are just so lethargic in their change process, and the challenges we have are so much beyond. It's lifelong learning issues, not, you know, what can you learn for 2 weeks in a senior year in high school. And but I'm just wondering, is that, you know,
intentional?
Is that because these particular projects focus on that broader lifelong learning, or is it, you know, what's the story there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. It was intentional. We had conversations early on about what makes the Southeast unique.
Mm-hmm.
Where do people go for trusted sources of information? And quickly, you know, you see the trucks driving along town with their DU, Ducks Unlimited, you know, stickers. The first questions you get asked in the Southeast, if not something about what football team do you like, is what church are you a member of?
Yeah.
And then, you know, so taking those things, leisure and faith-based organization of where the people are now, because some could argue that climate change is an immediate thing, and that it's important to train and our children, but we also need to train the adult populations because the decisions that are being made now are most important. Mm-hmm. And so those are things we talked about, you know, and also by having a distributed team, leadership team, you know, I may have been inclined to say, well, K-12, because that's what I knew best, you know, but because I had such expertise and different from my own on the leadership team, you know, this is the direction ultimately we decided to go. We are going to continue K-12, but it's not our primary or only objective. and so, because I think it's too important, especially in the Southeast, to ignore, because the curriculum just isn't there, and the teachers just aren't trained in earth science in general, let alone complex issues like climate change. And I have other K-12 projects, and I've heard more than once about the ozone hole being the reason for climate change, and you know, or the reason for the global warming and all of these things. And it's just like, there is definitely still a need there, you know. But these other things came out of what we wanted to do to best address the Southeast U.S. as well.
So,
thanks.
Dan, on that point, though, the while I completely agree with what you're saying, one of the concerns I have when we do that is if we only do that, the issues that we face are are at the sensory level. And so what happens in kindergarten through the lifetime of a learner in formal education is a very powerful but slow process.
Right.
So, you know, you know what I mean, Dan?
Your point is very well taken, Frank. I mean, it's not either or, but what we have seen, I think, in the past was only looking at school education, and now somebody called it, it's not ubiquitous computing, it's ubiquitous learning that takes place. The mayors need to learn, and you know, governors and business leaders, and only part of that can come from schools.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you know, one of the things that you know perhaps is a good topic for all of us is you know, we tend to not really have a sophisticated understanding of how these different modalities and parts of the learning process work together, and that, you know, when does somebody who is not going to a museum or informal learning situation, not in school, where do they learn?
Mm-hmm.
Where does an adult learn? And and how does that relate to what they learned in the formal and what they learned in the informal? And when they have kids, maybe they start to go into more informal. And we've struggled with this in the community for quite some time, and I don't think we've really done justice to this issue, so that we have a better working model of how, you know, climate science or whatever you want to use, literacy builds over a lifetime.
And yeah, very, very good point. I'm afraid I'm going to have to run. See you, folks.
Yeah.
Okay. No, those are good points, Frank. Thanks for bringing those up.
Yeah, I know Martin Storstieck at the Board of Science Education and I have had this running conversation for a very long time about this exact issue. But, you know, we haven't really made much progress beyond that's a problem.
Well, I guess I would say they learn from the information sources and the more from the information sources they trust.
Yeah,
so if someone trusts Ducks Unlimited as their primary source of climate change information in the Southeast, then, you know, great. You know, then you know that. And then if they trust their pastor to tell us, you know, to tell them information, or maybe they don't have time to vet all the information and they're trusting their leadership of these organizations to help them decide where best to act, then educating those leaders is an important way to go, and that's sort of where what we're trying to do.
And I take your point, and identifying those leaders, and then what program would you have to work with them so that they are knowledgeable in their influential role?
I think that's where in phase two for our project, we're hoping to have these online communities, but then also these annual workshops where we would invite just the leaders to come, and then an annual conference where the leaders could bring some of their folks with them. Maybe it be three or four, or maybe it be, you know, part of their congregation, or maybe it be some of their sub-leaders, you know. That would be up to them. But you know, that idea is that it would be phased, and part of the leadership of the leaders, or part of the training with the leaders, would be on the science of climate science, but also the communication.
Right. Oh, that's spot on. That's great that you guys are thinking. I've heard others thinking similar things, and that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, this is Scott again. It's the top of the hour, and I'd like to close off if we can. Thanks again to Karen for presenting today. This is really helpful for a lot of us who are thinking about these things, as obviously the discussion showed. So the other thing I just want to do before we close off is just remind folks that we have a presentation also next week. Meredith Hare and Kara Pike from the Social Capital Project are going to talk about climate access, which I don't think, certainly I don't know very much about, so I'm eager to hear their discussion about that. And they work with climate practitioners about building tools for effective public engagement and behavioral change campaigns. So I think it's very similar to what our discussion was just in the last few moments. So I hope everyone
thanks
can join
you all
us.
Again.
So thanks again, Karen. Appreciate it.
Yep. Take care.
Great.
See you at AGU.
Bye now.
Bye.